Okay, in your little booklet, we'll be looking at study. It says, dangers that confront active servants. Has anyone had a close encounter with death? Well, I haven't yet. I guess we'll all have one eventually, quite close. In fact, we'll encounter it, unless Christ comes first. Now, a few weeks ago, I was studying the life of Moses. There was a conference in Switzerland. I was invited to speak there about Moses. So I thought, yeah, I kind of like this character. But we all know the standard stories of Moses, right? So the Sunday school stories, we've told them and retold them and heard them. And then you think, well, if you want to speak to a group of Swiss brethren who knew more about Moses when I was born than I know now, you know, what do you say about Moses? So I thought, well, I'll start looking, not in the commentaries and books, I'll just start reading through the scriptures on Moses. Do you know how many times Moses appears in the Bible? 850 times. You find it in 30 of the 66 books. It's quite a challenge to kind of track Moses down if you want to. But most of it is in Exodus and Exodus, Numbers. He's got a funny death. And Peter tells us that Satan and Gabriel were fighting for his body. That's an interesting one to look into and look at some commentary. Was he fighting for the body while Moses was alive, or was he fighting for the body after death? You know, that was an interesting kind of study, but we won't touch on that one today. But what I noticed was that a number of times Moses gets threatened with death. In fact, I found 8 times where Moses got he had a death threat, a close encounter with death. And each one of these moments has an interesting lesson for those servants of God, those who want to please God, want to do something for God. Now, the relevance for this kind of weekend is that we're thinking about Christian life and thinking about the assembly life, and the idea is, with the discussion we'll have afterwards and maybe a bit tomorrow, is to get some ideas to go back to our assemblies and do something. Not just to play with the ideas. I know there are lots of ideas, but we need to what can we get from this weekend to try to implement? And when we try to implement things, we'll become like Moses. We'll have also some close encounters, perhaps not with death, but also some close encounters of some sort. Which was the first close encounter Moses had with death? He wasn't even aware of it. He was so small. In fact, even before his death, you know, before he was born, you know, Pharaoh sent out a message to kill all the boys. So even when he just came out, you know, they could have strangled him on birth. But the Lord had other plans. But that was his first close encounter. In fact, Jesus had a similar kind of thing. Eh? Just when he was young and babyish, Satan tries to stop good projects from the beginning. That's the first danger. Satan tries to kill good projects as soon as something begins to happen. Moses is a very important character in the Bible. God did quite a lot of things through Moses. And God, Satan could see that Moses is going to be used in a powerful way. So what does Satan try to do? Let's cut him from the beginning. Stop him. Now, maybe you leave this weekend with the Lord's given you 1 or 2 good ideas. What is Satan going to try to do? Stop your good intentions from the beginning. As soon as you get home and you share with someone, you'll get a criticism. It's the way Satan works. It's a danger we encounter. It causes disagreements and things like that. So the first danger we need to be aware of is that Satan tries to stop things from the beginning. After a while, Moses grew up in Pharaoh's court and went to university there, did his course in business administration, people management, conflict management, all these kind of things, that how to manage a nation and so on. And then when he was kind of biggish, he thought he was ready to start something. Can we look in our Bibles at that little text there? Exodus chapter 2, verse 11. Exodus 2. One day, after Moses had grown up, he went out to where his own people were and watched them at their hard labor. He saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his own people. Glancing this way and that, and seeing no one, he killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. Verse 15. When Pharaoh heard of this, he tried to... What did he try to do?
Kill Moses.
Try to kill Moses. In fact, in chapter 4, when God sent Moses back, he says, you can go back now. Those who are trying to kill you have died themselves, I guess. They did. So it wasn't just Pharaoh. It was a number of people, perhaps all the elite within Egypt. They thought threatened by this man. We need to kill him because he's going to do. That's the second encounter, close encounter, Moses with death. Now, what I notice is that Moses has a good heart from the beginning. He wants to do things well. He's got, in fact, if you look at the details, you notice he has quite a strong sense of justice. It's not fair that these people should be treated like this, and therefore he kills the fellow Egyptian. In fact, when he runs away, he arrives in a desert, and he arrives at a well. Remember the story? And he's at the well, and someone comes with some sheep. Who comes with the sheep? Some ladies. And when they come with the sheep, and then after that, soon after that, some other people come with some sheep, some men. And what do these men do? They push the ladies apart, away. You know? They push the ladies. And what does he do? Again, his sense of righteousness. Now, this can't be right. Why can't they wait till the ladies finish? And he pushes these men away, and he helps the ladies sort out their drink for the sheep. He has a developed sense of justice. Well, that's good. But what we notice here is that he runs on his own energy, his own ideas, his own strength, his own sense of justice. You know the story we had yesterday about a jeep? He can run on petrol or can run on gas. What was Moses running on right there? That's the second danger we find here. When we try to accomplish good projects, even God's projects, you might go a long way with some good, one or two good ideas from this weekend, and you say, I'm going to implement them with petrol power. Yes? That's the second danger, to try to do good things in our own strength, our own flesh. What was the third encounter of Moses with death? So the third, can you think of another death threat? Now, this third encounter with death, we'll read it in Exodus 4, I've never seen it in any of the Sunday school storybooks. I don't know why it doesn't appear in the Sunday school. All the little stories and pictures and things, when it comes to Exodus 4, you don't find it. There's two little verses which most stories skip. Exodus 4, verse 24. Have you got it there? Exodus 4, 24. At a lodging place, on the way, the Lord met Moses and was about to... Now, this is after Moses being commissioned and sent to Egypt, and eventually says, okay, I'll go. And then on his way, he stops at a travel lodge or something, and then at that place where he's staying, it says that God comes to Moses on the way to Egypt, and God wants to kill Moses. But Sephora, that's his wife, took a flint knife and cut off her son's foreskin and touched Moses' feet with it. Surely you are a bridegroom of blood to me, she said. So the Lord let him alone. At the time, she said, bridegroom of blood, referring to the circumcision. Can you see what happened there? Moses was commissioned to be a leader in Egypt, to take the Jewish people out of Egypt. And the sign of circumcision was the symbol God gave the people of Israel. And he was supposed to be a leader among the people, and what happened to his own son?
Nothing.
He was not circumcised. Now, it doesn't take too much imagination to imagine how this can occur. Sifra is not a Jew. She's a lady from the desert. And I can imagine that Moses maybe made an attempt when the baby was quite small. He said, hey dear, well, we're going to circumcise the little boy because I'm, you know, I can imagine the wife, you know, see if I grabs the baby and runs out with him. How on earth are you going to cut something off my little boy? You know, you might make a mistake and cut too much off or something, you know. And anyway, she panicked and runs off with the little boy. Maybe one or 2 days later, Moses says, come on, dear, look. Bring the little boy here, and we've got his penknife out, and we need to do this thing, you know, it's a symbol of the Jewish. And I can imagine the wife again panics and grabs the little boy and runs out with him, and it's causing a marriage problem. So what do most sensible men do? Says, well, dear, let's sort this out. Let's just leave it like this, but make sure you don't change his nappies in public. You know? And then we just, we'll keep this hidden. A great danger in serving the Lord is to keep sin hidden. I was talking to Kees Beekhuizen yesterday, you know, the Dutch guy, and he's telling a number of situations he's met in Holland among more legalistic assembly groups where some really bad, more incest, child molestation, a number of really wacky kind of things among very legalistic and, you know, Derby kind of brothers. Now, we're not here to accuse them or point fingers at them. What we want to point out is that it's very easy to say, yes, Lord, I want to do this, but we know that in our family, in our own life, there's something which is not right. We think, well, no, a lot of people maybe, it doesn't, I'll keep my nappies on or whatever the case might be. We'll just leave that and let that be. It's a great danger. The danger of hidden sin. Hidden sin hinders the work of God through us. For God, morality matters. Now, there's something, I'll make a little bit of point here, because it has, I wouldn't call myself a die-hard conservative, but I wouldn't call myself a liberal either. And sometimes it's a bit difficult to get on with some very conservative brothers. But what I have noticed is that quite often, those who are very tight on rules tend to be hiding something else. Not always, but quite often they seem to be hiding something else behind that. I was in Colombia last time, February this year. There's a guy in Popayán, a brother there, who's one of the leading brothers there. In fact, when the work divided, he led the division on, about five assemblies went with him on the conservative side. We had a telephone chat. We were quite good friends. He's managing two shops and got his nice car and stuff, and they're quite friendly to each other and stuff. And when I arrived last February, I heard, oh, he's not doing too well. What's wrong with him? He's left his wife and gone off with a young lady, a 20-year-old daughter of a couple in the assembly. I thought, no. You know, after being so rigid on little small doctrinal things and really no defilement, and it's this and that, and you can't do this, and you can't do that, and he takes off with a young lady and leaves his wife and... Well, I went to visit the town, a few hours' drive, and met his wife, and she was kind of, you know, she's tired of it, she wants divorce and all this kind of stuff, and let her calm down and see how things can work out. And well, if you phone him and he knows you're phoning, he won't answer. So I said, well, where is he? I got the address of one of his shops, and I said, I'll just turn up and see what happens. So it's about 9 in the morning, I'm not sure he's there, so he just kind of thought, oh, hello, and I called, oh, what are you doing here? He thought I was in Europe, so... So I just come around to say hello and how are you doing and stuff. Oh, yeah, okay. Have you got time? We can have a cup of coffee. So yeah, the staff in charge of the shopping went out and chatted for a while, had a cup of coffee, and it's. So after the talking about politics, Bill Clinton, talking about Mr. Bush, talking about Obama, you know, all things you have to talk about, or coffee prices and all these kind of things. Eventually, you kind of come down to something a bit more. So really, how are you doing? I think he didn't know that I knew. And then he looks at the floor and says, bad. What do you mean bad? Yes, I'm living with someone else, and I can't stop it. And I've got my Bible with me. I can't bring myself to open it. And since I've been there, I can't pray. I just can't pray. Now, probably went on a bit in the chat stuff, and the idea is not to kind of go through the whole thing. But what I want to point out here is that when God wants to use us, he wants clean vessels. And if you have something in your life, you know, this is not really okay, you're about, well, you know, God's a gracious God. From what I learned from Moses, that even God had great plans for Moses. From the beginning, from birth, God had very big plans. Moses was not Mr. Average Man. But on the way to Egypt, God called him out, look, sunshine, unless you sort out that family matter, that hidden thing in your, you know, that little thing, if you don't sort that out, I'm going to kill you. I can't work with you that way. The danger of hidden sin. Then we find another threat, number 4, in Exodus chapter 10. We know the 10 plagues, first plague, and then second plague, and then third plague, and then fourth plague, and then between, what's plague 9 and plague 10? Anyone remember what plague 9 was about? Let's look at Exodus 10. Something happened between plague 9 and 10. Exodus 10:28. The plague number 10 was the darkness all over the place. And then Moses goes in to see Pharaoh. And then Pharaoh says this to him on verse 28. Pharaoh said to Moses, "Get out of my sight. Make sure you do not appear before me again. The day you see my face, you will..." I'm sick of you, mate. Just get out of here. If I see you again, I'll kill you. Now, this is not the same Pharaoh of the other one, because he's died off, right? So this is a Pharaoh number 2, another Pharaoh threatening Moses. What can we learn about this fourth death threat? I think one clear lesson from this fourth death threat is that when we are messengers of God's truth, we risk being misunderstood and maybe threatened or whatever. It's not always popular to be a messenger of God's truth. And Moses at this time, he was representing God before the Pharaoh, trying to negotiate in God's behalf, and he received this threat. If you want to be in everybody's good books at all the time, we liked to be liked, right? We don't want to cause unnecessary problems. But if we really want everyone to be liking us all the time, the chances are that we won't stand up for what we know God wants us to do or what is right. It's not to be awkward, but sometimes, servants of God, we need to be prepared to say, well, if that's what the Lord wants, we need to stand up to it. And then we'll get some criticisms, we'll get a few things, we'll get maybe, well, I don't think you're as spiritual as I thought you were, a few of these kind of little comments. But if you feel that's the Lord, that's the way, then be prepared. The risk is of being unpopular, disliked or even threatened if we communicate clearly God's revealed will. It is my view, maybe don't agree, but I don't know, I tend to view that the missionaries among brethren have been overrated. That over the time, somehow, when you travel around to Switzerland and France, I don't know what you think of Frederick, but I tend to think they think we are more spiritual than what we really are. And in the years gone by, you know, they have nice big meals, and you know, they kind of somehow they treat you very, very specially. And suddenly you wonder, what do these people think we are? You know, we're just normal people that we feel called to do a certain job for the Lord and so on. And then when the division came and the split and all that kind of stuff, from one day to the next, many missionaries are on pedestals, put on, you know, complete and, you know, this, and they're not very spiritual, they're disobedient to the word, they're driven by money. There are all sorts of comments came out, and some of them quite painful comments. You too, if you want to stand up for, if the Lord gives you something, Romain, you want to push it through or manage it through or try to encourage a change or development in your assembly, if you want to be popular and liked by everyone in the assembly, you won't do it. It's not to be conflictive, but same with Moses. You can't be popular all the time if you're trying to push or carry through God's things. They'll judge, they'll comment on your judgment, your spirituality, and all sorts of things. Now, that was the fourth encounter of Moses with the Pharaoh there, Pharaoh trying to threaten him. The fifth encounter with death, I find it in Exodus chapter 17. And for this one, I suggest we just stand a moment, just because we're a heavy time of the afternoon. Shall we just stand while I read two verses, and then you can sit down again? Just nothing spiritual about standing, just a matter of getting the blood circulating. Exodus 17, verses 2, 3, and 4. So they, the people, quarreled with Moses and said, "Give us water to drink." Moses replied, "Why do you quarrel with me? Why do you put the Lord to the test?" But the people were thirsty for water there, and they grumbled against Moses, and they said, "Why did you bring us up out of Egypt to make us and our children and our livestock die of thirst?" Then Moses cried out to the Lord, "What am I to do with these people? They're almost ready to..." Thank you very much. We may sit down. Another close encounter. The fifth time Moses gets close to death. Quite a bad sight. Thirsty people grumbling, nearly ready to... Now, what I noticed, you know, this water issue comes up twice. You get it in Numbers later on. It's about 38 years later where the next generation also complain and God gives them water through a rock. But the detail I noticed here, verse 2, they quarreled with Moses and said, what did they say? "Moses, you give us water." Can Moses give them water?
No.
Oh, no, not an earthly chance. They're asking from Moses something that Moses can't give him. They expect Moses to do something that he can't do. We too have to be careful of other people's expectations on us. The danger of burdening ourselves with the expectations of other people. Sometimes in your assembly, they might expect you to be at all the meetings. Or they might expect you to to have always something interesting to say. They might expect you to give out hymns to pray to. They might have lots of expectations. And when you're driven by the expectations of other people, you know what happens? The joy goes. Just doing it, and you're doing it, and you can never really live up to other, you can never really match other people's expectations. That's why it's much better to try to live up for God, because He's a gracious God. We brethren, we Christians are not very gracious with each other. We have high expectations of each other, and we milk each other. And God is a gracious God. So the danger I see here, the fifth danger for Christian workers, or active servants, anything, is to try to live up, to burden ourselves with unrealistic expectations. In about 3 weeks' time, I'm due to go to Berlin for a weekend. Some Bible teachings there. I think a couple of assemblies joined in Berlin and invited me for to help with some Bible classes in the evening. Now, they invited me about 6 or 7 months ago. It's all kind of booked up and stuff. And I remember a few weeks ago, laying in bed, feeling somewhat stressed. What do these German brethren expect from me? You know, all these people know much more Bible than I do. I read quite a bit, but I forget a lot. And they're quite a lot of clever Germans. What on earth, what do they... I was laying in bed feeling quite stressed about what can I think about to take to these Germans. You know, they're going to pay for the air flight and all that kind of stuff. I'm sure they're expecting something from me, and then quite a lot, I guess. And I was getting all stressed inside about it. We can get stressed when we start living up to other people's expectations. A few days later, I was in a prayer meeting. Some brother shared something in a prayer meeting and just got my brain thinking a different angle. He said, "No, we don't have to perform for anybody. These Germans are just human beings like me. They have just the same struggles and hunger and thirst and dissatisfactions and struggles in the Christian life as I have. I don't need to try to live up to their expectations. I just need to say, Lord, what do you want to say to them? What's their need? And I'm available. Give me ideas of what they need and I'll do it." And then the pressure goes. A danger is for you and me to live up to the expectations of others, your parents, sometimes for the young ones or the older ones, well, we expect this from the younger ones, and there's nothing, it's quite natural to expect, but don't be driven by expectations of others. Moses here, they put too high an expectation on Moses. Give us water. He couldn't do that. Let's go to the sixth, another time when Moses gets quite close to death. Exodus chapter 33. Exodus 33, verse 18. Then Moses said, it's quite an interesting one here because it's so nicely packaged. Moses said, "Now show me your glory." Verse 20. But he, God said, "You cannot see my face, for no one may see me and live." So what was Moses asking for there? He says, "Lord, I want to see your glory." He says, "If you see my glory, mate, you're dead." What lesson can we get from that close encounter with death? Maybe someone wants to see the glory of God. That must be good. But God says, look, you're asking for the wrong thing. You can see my back and that's all you're going to get. A danger for Christian servants is to ask God for things that really are damaging for us. It's quite popular nowadays, and you get that quite often in magazines and songs and quite a few of preachers too, about demanding God. You get this from God. You demand it. You claim it. I think, well, that's not really the way we deal with our Heavenly Father. Just imagine if Moses just demanded, "I just want to see you, you know, yeah, I did, claim it, I get it." Well, man, if I let you see my glory, you're dead. You know, I've got work for you to do. Perhaps when we see needs and things we need, things we want, things we think we should pray for, maybe we should remember this experience of Moses and be careful in the way we ask. This modern idea of claiming and demanding things from God, I find it somewhat frightening. As a parent, I've got four children, and we want to do the best for our children. Is that right? That's what we try to do. But if my daughter comes and says, "I demand my pocket money." Oh, no. You know, I was going to give you a rise this week, but I don't think when they start demanding things, it damages the relationship. So why should we think we need to demand things from God? Can't we just gently, carefully say, "Lord, if it's thy will," that kind of thing, and ask? Moses asked to see something God said wasn't really right, so he gave him something else. Sometimes God might want to give it, but a different time, or a different way, or in a different, with our prayer life, a danger. We've got two more encounters with, and we have 7 minutes to go, so we're not doing too bad. Numbers chapter 11. Seventh encounter, close encounter with death. Numbers 11:11. He asked the Lord, "Why have you brought this trouble on your servant?" This is Moses speaking to God. "What have I done to displease you that you put the burden of all these people on me? Did I conceive all these people? Am I the dad of all these Israelites? Did I give them birth? Am I their mum? Why do you tell me to carry them in my arms and to nurse as a nurse carries an infant to the land you promised on oath to their forefathers? 13. Where can I get meat for all these people? They keep wailing to me, 'Give us meat to eat.' 14. I cannot carry all these people by myself. The burden is too heavy for me. If this is the way you're going to treat me," what does Moses say? put me to death. He's become somewhat depressive and suicidal here. Close his seventh encounter with death. Now, life has its burdens. If you get married, you acquire an extra burden. Once you have children, you acquire more burdens. If you get a job, you acquire more burden. They pay for you, but you still acquire burdens, right? It's not that burdens are wrong. It's that sometimes we can start carrying burdens we're not supposed to be carrying. God didn't expect Moses to be carrying all these people or like a mamla, you know. That wasn't Moses' job. But he threw those burdens on himself. We talked before about expectations that other people have on us. Here he had wrong expectations of himself. And sometimes they say, well, this assembly, it all depends on me. If I don't do it, if I don't do this, it's going to close down. And we all stress, and why don't people help? And this is, you know, and somehow we feel that the assembly or the camp or the ladies' club, everything depends on me. And, oh, Lord, Lord, kill me! Well, we don't really say kill me, but you know that kind of that kind of sentiment. In Matthew 11, which is verse 28 and 30, quite well-known verses, Jesus says to the disciples, says to everyone, says, if anyone is burdened or heavy laden, it says, come to me, and I will give you rest. Ideal verse for lazy people. Rest. Just what we want. That's the Jesus I like. Rest. But that verse doesn't end with verse 28. And then in verse 29, it says, take my yoke upon you and learn from me. For I am humble at heart, is it humble? And nederig van hart. Humble and gentle, something like that. And you will find peace for your souls. Now, you know what a yoke is, right? A big, like a big M, like a McDonald's, a big wooden McDonald's kind of thing. And on one side goes the neck of one bull, and on the other side goes the neck of another bull. That's a yoke. And what Jesus is telling us, he says, don't go around loading yourself with all sorts of things. Come to me and put your neck under the other side. All right? That's what he's saying? Yes? Only carry those burdens we can share with Jesus. If you think you're carrying a burden on your own, you're carrying the wrong burden. Marriage is a good burden. We carry it with Jesus. He's the one that gives us strength to carry things on. Children are burdens, good burdens. We need to learn to carry them with Jesus. To help in an assembly, to help, yeah, carry them. Only carry what you can carry with Jesus. And if you find yourself on your own, you're off on a tangent. Yeah? That's a lesson we learn here from Moses. The danger of burdening ourselves with unrealistic expectations of ourselves or with loads we're not meant to carry. We have 2 minutes for the last encounter with death. And we find it in Deuteronomy chapter 32. Deuteronomy 32, verse 48. On that same day, the Lord told Moses, go up into the Abarim range to Mount Nebo in Moab, across from Jericho, and view Canaan, the land I am giving the Israelites as their own possession. There on the mountain that you have climbed, you will die and will be gathered with your people, just as your brother Aaron died on Mount Hor and was gathered with his people. Interesting. Before he died, the Lord told Moses, climb the mountain and you're going to die up there. You call that a death threat? Would you climb the mountain or catch a boat somewhere else like Jonah said? By then Aaron had died, by then Miriam had died. Now it was Moses' turn to die. God still had plans for the Israelites, but God's plans were to be carried out not through Moses anymore, through other people. I think the lesson here is that everything down here comes to an end. You can hang on to it as long as you want to, you can do your best, but in God's times we have expiry dates. And the great danger for Christian servants is to hang on to things beyond the expiry date. When Lord says it's time to finish now, it's graciously best to finish. And here with Moses, to stop when God says go, we know is wrong. But to keep on going when God said stop is no faithfulness. It's equally wrong. The danger to keep on going when God says stop, to keep things alive beyond the divine expiry date. God's projects go on with or without us. We're talking about these curves in the church. The church does not depend on us. It is Christ's big project. I will build my church. With or without the Brethren movement, with or without Billy Graham, with or without you or me. You know, if he happens to use us to contribute a wee bit in it for a short time in a different, and it's fantastic. But he doesn't need that to build up his church. He's got his own thing. When we feel God is telling us to start something, start it. When you feel the Lord is saying it's time to close that down, to stop that. I find it in missionary work, it's so easy to start with a school, and somehow because you started, it has to continue, because it looks bad if you go back and it stops. You have to keep the jolly thing going. You know, a number of Christian projects look like these sick people in hospitals where they're pumping oxygen in, and it's kind of nearly dead, but they're pumping on, kind of keeping the jolly thing alive. It looks alive just with oxygen and pumping blood and stuff in. And no, if the Lord has used a ministry, a camp, or even an assembly, if the Lord has used that for blessing for years, and now it's time to close down and join something else with that. Everything down here are starting and stopping times. And there's no virtue in fighting beyond the expiry date. But we have to make clear that the Lord has said that. It's not Moses climbing up the mountains and trying to kill himself. As the Lord said, you've climbed that mountain, now your time is gone, and don't worry. I will carry on. They will come into the promised land. I will fulfill my dreams. You did well your part, and I will carry on with others. Okay, time is up. What do we learn from this? Well, in your notes you've seen we've got seven different dangers. We all encounter them in different ways. If you want them all listed out, you can just drop me an email. I got an email. I can just send you a file with things a bit more written out than you have in your notes. But in closing, I say that the Christian life, we know, is a battleground. It's not all easy. When we get to heaven, things will be much easier. But we're not there yet. And then helping in assemblies, helping Christian work, everywhere we work, there are these difficulties. And may the Lord use some of these dangers, the dangers of expectations of ourselves and others, just to, if we're aware of these dangers, the Lord can use them to help us be more balanced and healthy as we progress.